individual I have listed here is Chris Hesla.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and Secretary Hepler. I'm Chris Hesla. I'm the Executive Director of the South Dakota Wildlife Federation. I came up today to oppose this, but after reading the proposals by the staff to do away with number one, the restrictions of the use of snares, we're more in favor of it now, because I think hunting and trapping on public lands can go hand in hand, and I think it's an important thing to educate the public. We had a meeting earlier this year out in Rapid City over this topic, and one of the gentlemen's dogs was caught in a snare. And I think if people are prepared when they're out in the field with their dogs and that, it would help this situation out a lot. It's also a very important thing, trapping as far as predators and birds and things like that on private land, and we should also allow that on public land. So with the current proposal where you do away with number one of the proposal, we'd be in favor of it. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Charlie Bale. Bodie, I apologize. Charlie Bodie.
Charlie Bodie, B-O-D-E, line over the E. Bonham County. I live down along the Missouri River, and we have a lot of the public hunting and trapping down through there. We trap the ditches. That's all along the public. We seem to get along just fine. If we put tags on stuff, people are going to take our traps, snares, whatever it is, and put them where they're not supposed to be, and it's going to cause problems because you're going to get blamed for stuff you don't do. So, thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next, we have Larry Yimker.
My name is Larry Yimker. I live down in Union County, South Dakota. I am a volunteer trapper for the state down there, helping out with animal problems. I'm against all three proposals. I want to keep our snares. I think we need to educate people more. Hunters, work together. I believe, you know, we can make it better by just putting up signs and working with people. And I think we do need predator control even on our public hunting areas. We don't need to lose more pheasants and more deer by taking away more from the trappers. And thank you.
Thank you, sir. John Hopple.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, Secretary Hepler. I'm John Hopple, President of the South Dakota Trappers Association. Thank you for allowing us to come back and have this discussion. We had a pretty good discussion at Custer State Park, and I think we're continuing on in the right direction here. As far as proposal number one, we have not changed our view on that. We are still adamantly opposed to that. That just is too vast and too broad of an area to say all public lands. You're including the Black Hills in that. And there are no pheasant hunting going on in the Black Hills out there. I'm going to skip over number two for now and go to proposal number three. No snare using the springs or power devices may be used on game production area, water production areas above water year-round. We actually fully support that 100%. We feel that is the right direction to go. We do realize these are joint-use lands, and we want to take responsibility to make sure that our folks are out there are not placing these animals would in harm using the dispatch snares. Proposal number two, this is the hot topic right here for us. We would actually like to see proposal number two tabled until next spring. And the reason I mention that is because I want to try to show this in a different light that has not been discussed before. It's not a matter of just putting a tag on our trap. To us, it's a matter of identity theft. When someone steals a trap, they're actually stealing our identity now if we have our tag number or license number or something on there. Now, we're legally liable for that. There are unethical people out there. If they steal our stuff and they start trapping somewhere where they don't have permission, it's okay because it's not their name on that trap. We're the ones being responsible, being held responsible for that. Currently, right now, when we lose our traps or they're stolen, we don't report it to the conservation officers. For the most part, it's just our way of doing business. Now, we accept that risk. Every year, the average trapper is going to lose four or five traps. There have been cases during muskrat season when we had the muskrat wars going on. Over 100 traps were being stolen from some of our trappers. That's a lot. We do not report these right now, like I said, because it's just our way of doing business. We just write it off, okay? It's a $5 trap. It's a $12 trap. It's not worth 2 hours calling a conservation officer to come out and take a look at that. What we'd like to see is at the end of this year's trapping season, probably around middle to end of December, Game Fish and Parks would send out a survey to all the licensed fur bearers. How many of you folks actually lost traps this year? I think that'll give you a more accurate number of what you're dealing with. It's not the five or six that people think that are reported. It could be a couple hundred. Now, you multiply a couple hundred by 2 hours for every conservation officer who's got to go out and deal with a couple hundred, you're looking at an awful lot of resources. Some type of tracking or system will have to be developed so when I do report my trap stolen, they know, hey, John Hopple reported his trap stolen. It was a 1.5 coil spring and it was stolen over here. So if they find that trap being used illegally somewhere, there's actually proof that I did call that in saying, hey, my stuff was stolen. So I really think waiting till next spring to address this after we get some more firm data on how many missing traps we're talking would be the prudent way to go on that. Does anybody have any questions? Right. Yes, sir.
I was thinking about what you just said, and I mean, if your traps were identified, somebody stole them, you reported that they were stolen, then wouldn't it be easier to track the thief? Because if you caught the thief with your trap, you'd then have caught the thief. Wouldn't it work that way?
You may not catch the thief. What's going to happen is my trap with my identification number, name, or whatnot has been stolen. That thief may use that on property that he does not have permission to trap. They may not actually catch him out there. The landowner may walk out there, see there's someone trapped, there's a trap out there, holy crap. So they're gonna call the conservation officer who's gonna come out there, he's gonna look and say, yep, that trap right there, he's gonna lose little computer thing, that trap belongs to John Hopple. They might not even see the person who set the trap, but that trap is there, my name on it, my tag number on there. And that's where the problem's coming from right there.
It just seems more likely to me that if you catch the thief, if you will, with the trap that has your name on it, then you're going to be a lot farther down the road than if a thief doesn't,
if you can catch the thief, 90% of the time you're not going to catch them because they're not actually going to probably be going out there and checking traps like a normal trapper would, the responsible trapper would. These guys know when they put that thing out there, it's a hot potato. They're going to be glassing it from down the road. They're going to do drive-bys. There's also a good possibility that they're going to take some of our more lethal traps, like a 220 condibear, for example. We're allowed to use those in culverts as long as there's no bait or lure. I live out in Meade County, and I do a really good job of keeping the skunks off the roads out there. If you live out in Meade County, you find a culvert, you found a skunk. So I use those 220s there. Now, you're not supposed to use bait or lure. That doesn't mean someone taking my stuff is not going to go down the road, start putting half a chicken in there. But again, it's my name that's on there. So the conservation officer, I think we're just placing an awful lot of responsibility on them. Just like a stolen credit card. If my credit card is stolen, I'm going to report it. But I still may be liable until someone clears that thing. And I think we're just kind of asking for trouble if we go down this road. I'd really like to put this off till next spring so the Game Fish and Parks guys can put a survey out after trapping season to see how many traps are really missing out there. Is it just five or six that they hear about, or is it $300 or $400 that we don't report because we just write it off as a cost of doing business?
Well, and the other thing I wanted to do was say thank you for your position that you have now on the dispatch snares and those kill snares. And I mean, I appreciate the back and forth and
it's
the position that you've taken.
It's the responsible thing to do. You know, we understand these are joint use areas out there. You know, we're hoping everybody understands their joint use areas out there. So, thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next, we have Trina Lean.
Hi, I'm Trina Lean. I'm here to talk on behalf of my husband. We are members of the South Dakota Trappers Association. He's unable to get here as he's working. And also on behalf of my son, who is at Youth Conservation Camp in Rapid right now. We do agree with not using dispatch snares on public land. However, there are different kinds of snares, and not all of them are dispatch, so we do not want to see the elimination of all snaring on public land. We have many friends that are livestock owners, and we recently had one gentleman that lost two lambs because a coyote killed him, and he accessed their private land via public property. If there was a snare out there, that maybe could have been prevented. Snaring on public land would be better than any baited traps. That's all I have to say. And I think that if we educate our young people that are trying to learn trapping, that it would be very beneficial, and even to a lot of the hunters that don't know that much about it. I myself am learning more and more about trapping, and it is a very good way to control our predators. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Next, we have Mr. Rob Fuller.
Rob Fuller, Clark, South Dakota. Good afternoon, Secretary Hepler, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. I would like to address the three proposals on snares and trap tags. I am a full-time trapper over 200 days a year, a pheasant hunting guide, and a fur buyer. And my wife is the executive secretary of the South Dakota Trappers Association. On proposal number one, restrictions on snaring public ground. This ground was paid for all sportsmen, not just by the pheasant hunters. The use of education would work far better. How many dogs are killed by heat exhaustion, car hits, accidental shootings, and other obstacles? Hunting is inherently dangerous, so education is a solution, not more restrictions. On proposal number two, trap tags on public ground and right-of-ways. First of all, right-of-ways were designed for vehicle travel and utilities, not hunting. As a landowner, I pay taxes to the middle of the road. I can set a snare or a trap 1 inch off the right-of-way and not use a trap tag and be legal. But dogs still will trespass on my ground when being hunted on the right-of-ways and are caught. I would need to buy 3 different tags, also as my wife and son both trap. More added expense to charge my customers, as I would have to tag all equipment in case used on public ground. That is over 1,500 trap tags. That adds up in a hurry. What kind of rules will be used to verify stolen traps? Traps of mine are stolen every year. That is a business success, and I do not report it. I just expect it. Some years it's 4 or 5. Some years up to 50 to 100. Anti-steal them. Other trappers steal them. People that don't like trapping steal them. If I have to account for every trap, my conservation officer is not going to be very happy. That's time taken away from taking care of legal laws and expense for a database and somebody's full-time job to keep track of everything so it's registered. Just because other states do things differently than South Dakota, why would we use their rules? If we do, let's look at other states' hunting regulations. Some states have unlimited waterfowl tags for non-residents. Others do not allow right-of-way trapping. If we go by other states, we would not need a Game Fish Commission, just use some other state's one. We are South Dakotans. You make rules for this state, not what some other states do. Proposition 3, not using dispatch snares on GPAs and WPAs during pheasant season. I think myself that should be year-round. We're not the only people out there. We share it, pheasant hunters, people who look duck hunt, deer hunters. A regular snare can be used on public ground. Dispatch snares should only be used on private. Your trappers provide a service for and pay for the right with the loss of habitat and weather. Pheasant numbers are down. We trappers keep predators down, but not by being handicapped by losing efficient tools for management. Your own biologists have a formula for how many nests predators get a year. It says every egg eater, which are coon, skunks, possums, coyote, fox, get 4 nests a year, and they have 5 eggs per nest down. In my opinion, that is low, but by using your number, that's 20 pheasants per predator that you would keep if they were trapped or snared. Why would you not expand trapping so you would have more pheasants, not less?
Sir,
thank you for your time. Just,
good. Thank you. Perfect timing. Next, we have Spencer Pohl.
Good afternoon. I'm going to pretty much just reiterate what has been said before me. Number one, I agree with the recommended changes of do not adopt that. Number two, the administrative rule of which keeps the traps and snares tagged. Going by what I've heard trappers say from other states that have this rule, what they're seeing is a lot of antis and a lot of people competing for that land are taking their traps, setting them illegally, and calling them into the CO. No, the CO has to go by what they see, and what they see is my trap with my tag set illegally. And I really have no way of saying that's not true, that was stolen, whatever. The powered snare deal, I guess I'm going to have to really agree with that. I've been a trapper for a couple of years and a pheasant hunter pretty much my whole life. I've seen dogs get into snares. And what I've seen is that a domestic dog, when they get into a regular snare, will instinctively just sit like he's on a leash. A powered snare, on the other hand, is a different deal. I am completely against a powered snare on all public ground, as we do share them with bird hunters and whatnot. The other thing that I would say is one gentleman touched on conibears with bait on it. I don't know, and maybe I'm mistaken, and a CO can correct me, but any laws that prohibit that. And what really scares me on public land would be what's called a bucket set. So if you're on land with a bucket set, you have a piece of meat in the back of a bucket and a conibear in the front of that. So your target animal, which would be a raccoon or a skunk, will go through that and it asphyxiate or breaks the neck of that animal. If you get a dog in there, it's almost impossible without a tool to get that out. So that's one thing that I would like clarified. That's all I had. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next, we have Mr. Virgil Horat. Did I butcher your last name too much? Virgil?
I'm Virgil. I have nothing to say. I'm Virgil Horst.
Passes? All right. Thank you, sir. Next, we have Ryan Bruner.
Sorry about that. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, Secretary Hepler, Ryan Bruner. I'm the Commissioner of School and Public Lands. Thank you for taking public comment this afternoon and providing this opportunity. My comments were specific to proposed change 1. I don't have a position on proposed change 2 or proposed change 3. But proposed change one had brought up some concerns from folks who do lease school and public lands because of the broadness of it. So I would say that I support the department's recommendation to not adopt proposed change one of the proposed rules. Many of you are probably aware school and public lands are uniquely different than just about any other type of government property because they were set aside in 1889 to be leased for the benefit of our state school children. And so that's the primary purpose with everything else being secondary. And so the folks who lease that, we pay a lot of attention and try and work with a lot, and predator control is a big concern of theirs. And so proposed change one brought up some concerns because it is written very broadly to apply to all public lands. There's a lot of other situations in either state law or administrative rule that lists out the specific types of property or lists school and public lands separately because we are unique with our purpose and management of those properties. But with this being broadly written, it doesn't take some of that into consideration. A lot of our land, almost all of our land, is leased, and so because of the fact that the current rule requires you to have permission from a tenant or landowner if livestock are present, and we do allow year-round utilization of that property, almost all of the snaring that would occur on school and public lands would be by a rent-paying lessee who's doing it as a form of predator control. And so that's the majority of the situations we're dealing with. Also, over 80% of our land is in western South Dakota, and it's leased for grazing. And so we have a lot of antelope hunting, a lot of deer hunting. We don't have as much prime pheasant hunting property in our portfolio just because of the type of land and where it's located. And so having a broad change related to pheasant season doesn't take into account that variety of different types of property and landscapes across the state. And so certainly appreciate your time here today, appreciate the department's recommendation to not adopt proposed change one, and I would just like to say that I support that, and thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Next we have Craig Parkhurst.
Good afternoon. My name is Craig Parkhurst from Armour, South Dakota. I'm the state's attorney there. Previously, I've been in law enforcement for about 15 years in the state. I'd like to take the opportunity today to express very quickly my opposition to proposal number one for the reasons others have stated, and I express my support for proposal number three. I too believe that kill snares should not be allowed on public property. And I want to spend my time on proposal number two today, that of trap tags. I believe that trap tags present in this day and age a risk of identity theft. I understand that the Game Fish and Parks would proposed to create a unique identity number. I don't see that as much of a problem, or as much of a solution, I should say. If I saw Mr. Hepler setting a trap, I could wait till he left, go dig that trap up, look at his trap tag. Now I have Mr. Hepler's unique trap identification number. I look in any catalog or go online and I order 10,000 trap tags with Mr. Hepler's number on them, and I start setting traps all over creation as sloppily as I can with the idea of smearing Mr. Hepler, the Game Fish and Parks, trappers in general, or whatever would benefit my agenda. I just see that as a huge problem. The other thing that I think about trap tags, you talk about hunter recruitment. Trapper recruitment is in the same situation. Most hunters, trappers, fishermen begin when they're young. I remember when I was young and trapping. I lived in Yankton, South Dakota. I trapped Marne Creek in the northwest part of Yankton. I could go to the hardware store and stare at the traps and save my money and buy a trap now and then and go set traps in areas with now is the mall, but the idea of having to send away to have trap tags made probably would have overwhelmed me at that young age. I could go to the hardware store with my saved cash and buy a trap as I needed or could afford it, but sending away or having trap tags made would be very difficult. And I still think that for young trappers, I have a grandson that I'm teaching to trap, that money that he'd have to spend on trap tags would end up to be a significant portion of his trapping budget. I also think that to answer your question, Commissioner Jensen, if a trap is stolen with my trap tag on it, if the person was worried about being apprehended for that theft, it'd be an easy matter for him to remove the trap tag. And then once again, that trap is, you know, they're all fungible, basically. You know, once in a while we can describe a particular setup we have on a trap, but quite frankly, your COs don't have the time to go looking for $20 worth of traps here and there, and they just are gone. I know that it's been said that other states require trap tags, but other states also require hunting licenses proudly displayed on placards on your chest or on your back. We don't do that either, and there's good reason not to do that, and there's good reason not to have trap tags in South Dakota. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next, we have Sarah Mart.
Good afternoon. Thank you for listening to me today. My name is Sarah Mart, and I live in outside of Vermilion, South Dakota, on the Missouri River, just west of Clay County Park. And I just want to start by saying that we're a family. My husband and my three kids live out there, and we're a family of hunters and fishermen. And so hunting and the game, fish, and parks is a big part of our lives. So I am not against hunting and fishing and such. My dog, though, this past winter in February went missing. I have a chocolate lab who's 10 years old, and I think that you guys have a packet, but I just, you know, here's what he looked like Monday. So he's in good shape now. But this is Rex, and he went missing, and he's never been gone overnight, and he was gone that first night and throughout the week. And if you recall our winter, it was a terrible week of lots of snow and wind and frigid temperatures. He was 10, and so we looked and looked and looked, but assumed he had died, and there was some peace in that, thinking that he wasn't in pain and was out of misery. Well, a week later, he returned. He showed up in his heated dog bed again, and so 1 week later. We hadn't noticed. We knew he was all wet and he was licking himself. And so we took him to the vet, and then that's when we discovered I had never even heard of snare traps. So that was when we had discovered that he was severely wounded by a snare trap. The vet gave me, you have a copy of the medical records, and I highlighted and kind of starred the comments that were about that. But I also got a message from the veterinarian that I just wanted to read that described it a little further. On presentation, it was suspected that Rex had suffered injuries secondary to being caught in a snare trap. He had a circumferential wound surrounding his entire neck. The deepest part of the wound was located on the ventral neck and was 1 inch deep. And just so you know, I mean, from ear to ear, it was an inch deep. And you can see in the picture that I included, and this was days after that I was like, oh, I should take a picture because I'm the only one in the family that could even look at it and care for it. So that's what that means. The wound was foul smelling and pustular discharge was present, indicating infection. There was some unhealthy granulation tissue present within the wound. The wound itself appeared to be about 3 to 7 days old. And because it was so old, it couldn't be stitched. So it was a very slow process of healing because the stitches weren't an option. He underwent surgery in which the wound was clipped, cleaned, flushed, and debrided in order to remove unhealthy granulation tissue. Snare traps in general have a locking device which prevents the snare from loosening when the animal's captured. We've kind of already talked about that. So I think that you realize that stuff. So my plea is really for the trap tags. I feel like if the trapper had been forced to be more accountable, he would have checked that trap before 7 days. And, you know, the vet said he was there for, you know, that the wound was that old. That was why it couldn't be repaired easily. And I just feel like, just like our set lines that are in the river, you know, knowing that if I don't abide by the rules, that I could have my privileges taken away or I could be fined. I feel like that trapper would have been more apt to check those traps more regularly, or how he was supposed to, had he been at risk of losing privileges. So I guess, just, you know, out of concern for family pets, I just hope that you will think of that as you're making these decisions. You know, I had never even heard of snare trap. It wasn't something that, you know, right there along the river where we were, we didn't know that people were trapping along there. So it certainly is something that I would be looking for in the future, but didn't know about before. So I just ask for you to really consider that, because I've heard of other dogs that were caught, but ours was just such an unusual circumstance since he was not with us when it occurred. So thank you for listening.
Thank you, ma'am. Next we have Jeff Clark.
Hi, I'm Jeff Clark, landowner, livestock producer, and a member of both trapping associations. I live in northeastern South Dakota, Marshall County to be exact. I strongly oppose proposals 1 and 2, and I guess with the third one, I can live with that one. But I think with closing the public land, it's public land, it's everybody's land, and I think by just taking away that spring on the snare, I think we're good with that. So, public land is for everybody to use, and I guess that's all I have to say. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. Next we have Russ Camburn.
Yes, my name is Russ Camburn. I'm from Brookings, South Dakota. And just to clarify a little bit of what I've heard here already, the bucket set that they were talking about, the baited bucket, I believe when I was on the board of directors, we already have that outlawed. If you look in the law books, you cannot have a baited bucket like in a road ditch for raccoon. So that shouldn't happen. We do police ourselves. Me and my son actually found one, and I called Game and Fish and told them exactly where it was, and I don't know what happened from that. And talking about traps stolen, I did have one $30 trap stolen this spring, muskrat trapping, but as the guys say, it's the cost of doing business. Me and my wife, we just kept rolling on trapping muskrats. It's just how it works. Even if I'd had a tag on the trap, it wouldn't have done any good. The guy would have clipped it off. Recently, we went out to Montana to the NTA Trappers Convention, and I went to a vendor who sold used traps. I bought a couple dozen number 2 coil springs, and I had tags on all of them. So now I got trap tags from Montana, and I guess that guy can go trapping here if he wants to. All I got to do is put him on a trap, you know. So that's not the answer. But getting back to what I've written, I'm opposed to any changes in our snaring regulations and the tagging of traps. I attended the commissioner's meeting at Custer State Park, where many good ideas were brought to attention of the board. Some of those ideas were the use of the Game and Game Fish and Parks website and a hunting handbook to educate the hunter to release his or her dog. Also, there could be signs posted at the parking locations warning hunters that the public land they're about to hunt may have snares in use to control predators. I believe it's way too early to start taking the privileges of the trappers away before we try to educate the sportsmen. The timing being proposed to begin trapping public land is late enough in the season that the trapper could be prohibited from pursuing their sport due to snow cover and winter weather conditions. I believe the changes in the laws are very unfair to the trappers who should have the right to practice their hobbies and interests as well as other sportsmen. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next, we have Stephen Parmdy.
Kevin Parmdy?
Oh, I apologize. Right. Kevin Parmdy.
My name's Kevin Parmley. Glad to meet you guys. I wish I was a public speaker, okay? But I've been a trapper all my life. All right. The one tool that's been around since biblical times is a snare, all right? I was going to bring my dog and put on demo, and I talked to Mark Steck last night, and he said he put on a demo with the dog out to Custer. Is that correct? Any dog that walks into a snare, pretty much it's ever been on a leash, sets down, because it's no different than a leash. To release this snare, all you have to do is right there. It's released. Game Fish and Parks makes a handbook. It's real easy. Alaska still uses 330s. On land, snares. They put a demo in there to show the hunters how to release that kind of stuff. We are part of the public. We have just as much right to that public ground as the hunters. We all know this law right here, that is bill is being pushed forward. It's been pushed forward because of money. Not because there's a problem. There's a shot collar. That causes more harm and pain to a dog than the snare does. The ice. So what do? Make it a law that we can't hunt? Because how many dogs are lost because of thin ice? Nobody can hunt until the ice is 2 to 3 inches deep. What about the heat? How many dogs are lost because of heat hunting early? Airports don't let animals on the airplane until it's 80, if it's above 85 degrees. So do we make a law that states 85 degrees, you can't hunt? No, they go after us. And do you see what's happening here? I've sat here and listened to different things longer than I wanted to. But you talk about money here. You talk about money over here. We don't ask for any money. But we do ask to keep one of the most humane, hunter-friendly tool that we have. I caught my first red fox at 9 years old. On public land. I'm sorry, I get really emotional on this stuff. Because you guys are always trying to take our rights away. What about our rights? We kill tens of thousands of predators with these things. Don't them hunters have any common sense? They got pheasants because we are out there. We're not asking here, coming here and asking for money for gas. We're not asking for more airplanes to kill coyotes. We do it ourselves. I don't support any of these proposals. I say it needs to go back to the original one, because right now, three different trappers back there talking about, well, we support, that might be all right to take the ram snare out. Well, you know what? There's a difference in ram snares. Quite obviously, people don't know what they're talking about. I made a living with these things, all right? There is a difference. It needs to go back to the table and we need to discuss everything, and it needs to go back to the original until we get it figured out. Is what we need to do. Thank you for your time, and believe me, there's a lot more I want to say, and trap tags are no good. And to your answer, do you really think a thief, if he was stealing that trap, would leave that trap tag on there? It's common sense, people. And money has pushed this thing where it shouldn't be. And you know what it's also causing? Because of just my thoughts on the heat, the shock collar, PETA will take care of this. But you know what that's causing? Because of money in our great South Dakota wildlife, it's causing a split. We need to use more common sense and not let money buy everything, people. This is our heritage. Because money will take it and ruin it all. It's ruining it now. Thank you.
Here's your caller.
Thank you, sir.
Might need that.
Again, everyone, we understand this is a very passionate issue, but we also just remind everyone to please be respectful.
I am being respectful.
Yeah, no, it wasn't directed at you, sir. Next, Lance Koch. Yeah, I'm 0 for 20 right now.
Thanks for having me. First, I'd like to commend your newest commissioner because he came to me with questions as soon as he got onto the board, which I thought was pretty awesome. I just have a few comments. Number one, the education thing is so much more important than anything else. This will be my 40th year of trapping. I've been on the board of the South Dakota Trappers Association years ago, and we pushed back then for getting information into that catalog. And it's like pulling teeth. We can't add any pages. It needs to be in there. We have to educate not just the hunters, but the public. And that's one of the big issues. I'm going to address the trap tags, and most guys aren't going to agree with me. When I was on the board, it's been an issue for 10 or 12 years now, and we're going to get trap tags. I know we're going to get trap tags. It's going to happen. Clear back then, we were told, right or wrong, even if my trap tag is on somebody else's property where it's not supposed to be, if the conservation officer cannot put me on that property, he cannot give me a ticket. He has to know I did it. I'm not opposed to trap tags as long as it's not my name and number or address. Most guys aren't going to agree with that, but that's my feelings, and I just thought I'd express that. The snaring regulations, I have no problems with the not using the spring. You're calling them rams. They're not rams. It's just a spring. I can tell you in the last few years, I've released two dogs with the spring on it. It does not hurt the dog. I've taken both dogs home and informed the owners that they should not let their dog run wild. That's another issue. They were on private property where they shouldn't have been, not public land. So there's a lot of education needs to be done. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. All right, this next one I think I can ace. John Johnson.
Brought a visual aid. You might not like it.
Good afternoon, Commission, and Mr. Chairman, Mr. Secretary. I'm John Johnson from Northern Cotting County. My address is Ortley, South Dakota. I'm a member of the Grass Lake Conservation Club, and I am also reporting for them today or supporting their views. So by the discussion we had at our last club meeting and the proposal we passed, I would say we would support 2 and 3. Proposed changes that you have 2 and 3. And it's not only dogs that get into snares. We think with the tags that there would be a little more thought and preparation maybe into placing them
and that's our hope anyway. So I won't take any more of your time. I'll probably have to go wash. I found this on my property, and it's split in half on me today. It was in one piece. This is the way it was found. This deer broke loose, but did not survive. And I could not find the tethered end in some old willows down there. And I didn't look long enough, maybe. It may have been there. It may not have been a snare placed on my property, because really no one had permission there. So I just wanted to show you, this is exactly where they found it, only it was in one piece, and this morning it failed me when I put it in the bag. So we would encourage proposals 2 and 3, and thank you. So,
thank you, sir. Next we have Jason Fisher.
Hi, my name is Jason Fisher. I'm a resident of Coddington County. I'm a trapper, hunter, fisher. As a matter of fact, I do it all. I have to admit that I'm both a hunter and a trapper, and I support both sides of this. My dog is very angry at me when I go trapping. I have to leave him at home. I have also taken him and caught him. So, under the circumstances, I usually adjust my season to the season that we as South Dakotans go through. Now, I don't like leaving my dog home in the middle of December to go trapping, but I do it because there's thin ice. It's first ice danger. You know, I think we should shorten both pheasant season and trapping season. We should move the dates to an equal point, maybe December 15th, somewhere in there, to eliminate the dangers of thin ice for trappers, for hunters. And, you know, for trapping on that side, we need to worry about educating, putting some type of warning signs, and possibly putting in the handbook some type of way to remove snares, what they look like, you know, how to use them. There's situations where people can get a dog caught up and they freak out. It's a simple device. My dog's been caught before. He sits down. He actually starts to listen better when I've caught him. To be honest, it didn't hurt him. And if you're responsible about your hunting, you shouldn't have any problems with a trapper being on the land with you. I'd like to see it stay the way it is. I oppose 1, 2 could be all right. I would rather see something start with a tag at the, you know, parking area, say trapping in progress. Game Fish and Parks already has them for themselves. When they trap on land, they put a sign up that says trapping in progress. So then if you go out there with your dog, you know that it's your liability, that if you get your dog caught up, it's not the Game Fish and Parks fault. In the same circumstance, I think the trapper should have a sign that's registered to them that says, hey, you know, this can work. Rather than an individual trap tag, it might work a little bit better as, say, you know, a general area tag, you know, let people know. Trapping is a dying breed. In due time here, there's not going to be any of us left. I'm probably one of the youngest people in this room. And, you know, there's things out there that are M44s, planes, snares, they're all tools to manage depredation. And one of the main reasons I trap is because I trap the land I hunt, and I like having better land to hunt on. So in Cottington County, I trap where I hunt, so then I have more pheasants to shoot. In that circumstance, I hope everybody acts that way. Maybe more of us would be responsible and try to manage the land if we weren't so lazy. You know, it's hard to go out in that late season in the cold and spend your time out there. A lot of pheasant hunters disappear. They all go start ice fishing. I still think that there's a middle ground that should be met somewhere. And taking away trapping on public lands is only going to ruin our public lands. We're going to end up with sick animals and no more populations. Out east of Watertown, there is no pheasants to be seen. And in the end, it's all going to turn into the same thing. I just want to see it properly managed for all of us as a sportsman and a trapper. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next, we have Thomas Jones.
Good afternoon. Tom Jones from Britton, South Dakota. Just going to offer real brief comments. I come at this visit from maybe a different perspective. You've heard it a couple of times, but looking at this from a trapper recruitment and retention standpoint, I'm going to offer comments that I think originally I had some questions about number three. I had some back and forth on it, but I'm going to oppose all three of these. Glad to hear that number one is coming off the table, or could be coming off. That's the first I'd heard about it. That's what my focus was going to be. But I look at this from a standpoint of a parent of young children or college-age children now that I'm trying to get into this activity. Have a college-age son that's become our Christmas vacation activity is snaring coyotes. And we do it together, and it's a blast. We have a lot of fun. Number one would significantly impact him because he would, by the time it wouldn't be until he went back to college that the public land would come into play. So I'm glad to hear that that's at least tentatively being rolled back. Tagging, I look at it from the KISS principle, keep it simple, stupid, and try to keep things just as easy as we can. I'm a firm believer that in cases of hunting and fishing or hunting and trapping regulations, the more regulations that we have in place, the more complicated it is for people to understand what they need to do, the less people you're going to have taking part, and particularly new people that are coming in. You know, and trapping is already a pretty big commitment. When you decide that you're going to set some traps, you're talking multiple days of going back and checking them, and this isn't something that you can just decide on Sunday afternoon that you're going to go set a trap line. You have to plan significantly ahead of things, and it's already complicated. Unless there's a solid scientific basis for why we need to do this, don't. I mean, if there's a demonstrated need for this because of these problems that we've had in the past, at certain times some regulations are worth the pain of having that regulation in place when it comes to retention. But in general, I think you have to ask the question every time, is this regulation presenting a significant burden to someone who's starting to take up these activities that we all know and love? And I think that number one and number two in this case have an issue from that standpoint. Offer comment on number three. Like I say, I went back and forth on this one. I do use dispatch snares at times. I've got a German Shorthair that runs as hard as any dog you've ever seen in your life, and he's hit a couple of my snares when we've been out checking them, and I don't have any trouble removing those snares from him. It doesn't cause any issue. I do think that the gentleman earlier that made the comment about making sure that we're talking apples to apples is really important. There's a lot, when you start talking about spring-loaded snares, there's a lot of things. Are we talking ramline snares, which I don't think we are? Different kinds of springs that are on there have different impacts as far as dispatch snares go. And painting with a really broad brush here is not always justified, I don't think. So I would like to see that one taken back and tweaked a little bit to try to make sure that the snares that have the most potential for damage are the ones that we're talking about. Don't paint that with too broad a brush and just say that everything that could be considered to be having a spring on there is the same as everything else. So those are my comments, and thank you for the opportunity to comment today.
Thank you, sir. Next, we have Vince Logue.
Good
afternoon. I'm Vince Logue. I'm from Warwick, South Dakota. I'm with the Western South Dakota Fur Harvesters. We oppose proposal number one, although we do very much support education. I think on both halves, education is probably the key to getting along and making things work. We adamantly oppose proposal number two. There is no legitimate reason to tag traps and snares. Almost everything's been said with it. There's absolutely no way to prove that snare or trap that has that tag is actually being used by that individual. Such as if my son-in-law was using my traps, because I'm the owner, it would have my tag on it. Does not mean I'm the one setting the traps. You can't set enough laws to keep someone who has no respect for the laws from breaking them. It's impossible to do. If they're out to steal traps, they're going to take those tags off them. If they're out to, say, cause problems for some competition, they're going to leave the tags on and they're going to set them in some areas to get somebody in trouble and get them in bad with the game, fish, and parks. It happens. Tags will get ripped off of traps and snares. Traps and snares both get damaged every year by animals. The piece that gives the least resistance is going to get ripped off. I do believe the young lady that had the dog that got caught in the snare, her fight is not with legal trappers. Her fight, it sounds like to me, is with an illegal trapper. No matter what you do, if they have no respect for the laws and have no respect for animals, you're going to end up with things like that, and you cannot make a law that's going to change that. We do support proposal number three. We feel that is very legitimate. It's something that, as was said before, is I guess I'm not sure what I want to say. fair on both halves. And we'll add, you know, a little bit of protection. Dispatch snares obviously are harder. To me, I've never used one, but to me it would be more difficult to remove, and they would cause more damage, possibly. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We are getting down to the bottom of our list, and I know that we've gone over a lot of things, so if the topic that you wanted to address has already been addressed, and if you want to just say me too, that's absolutely fine, but at the same time, you're obviously free to speak your mind, so I just wanted to throw that out there as well. But next we have Jared Kaiser.
Good
Hi, I'm Jared Kaiser from Sioux Falls, South Dakota. My dog was caught in a snare this December. It forced me to sit out in a field for 7 hours because the locking mechanism on the snare was broken and it wouldn't release. The dog sat straight down when he was caught. He didn't move, and I was only about 100 yards from my truck when this all happened. I didn't have my phone on me, so I couldn't call for help. I couldn't leave because he would try and follow me, and he would have killed himself. So I do support number one, although if it does not pass, I think we do need a lot of education, because the wire cutters required to cut through the snare is also a lot different than a lot of people would expect. It's hard to cut through those. I think we also need signs, because a lot of the out-of-state hunters, they're not going to know that trapping's allowed. They're not going to know the laws. So I do think that we do need signs up. For proposal number two, that's no different than me having to label my tree stand or my ice shack when I'm out ice fishing. So I don't see why the trappers should not have to label their traps. For number three, I do also support that as well. So that's really all I had. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next, we have Dan Kaiser.
Mr. Chairman, fellow commissioners, Commissioner or Secretary Hepler, game and fish staff, fellow outdoorsmen, and interested parties. When I first brought this, Jared was my son. That incident is extremely emotional for me. I could have lost my son, and I could have lost my dog. That being said, I was clear in my inquiry and my statements that I do not have any issues with trapping. I've been clear about that from the beginning. I support trapping and realize the benefits brought to all outdoorsmen, ranchers, and others who enjoy the great state, this great state has to offer. We need to work together to promote the abundant opportunities this state has to offer, whether it is the small game hunter, the waterfowler, trapper, bird watcher, fisherman, or simply an outdoor enthusiast. The key is to make it safe for all those who use this land. This is a safety issue. I had a lot of things written down here today. One of the things that bothered me a lot was there were statements out there that this was an overreaction to one incident, to one dog, and one individual. I've talked to many people. It's not one incident. It happens. It happens frequently. It goes unreported. The snare trap that Jared was involved with took another individual who could not release that snare trap. He had a .45 on him. He took 5 shots, missed holding it to break the snare. He finally held it closer to his gun, shot it, and the recoil cut his hand severely. Is that the work of an illegal trapper? I don't know. Or an illegal snare? I can't answer that. But our dog did sit down. But Jared was right. If he'd left that dog, that dog would have fought to his death to follow him. I'm not here to sling mud or denounce an organization. I do, however, feel a little bit like David versus Goliath. The South Dakota Trappers Association has waged a strong campaign in opposition to the proposed regulations changes, and with my current obligations to my employer, I simply could not take the time to counter their support. And there are a lot of individuals out there that support my position. I just couldn't do it. I work 60, 65 hours a week. I'm on the road a lot. I travel. I cover 7 states. I have 170 people in my organization. So for me to spend a lot of time on this issue, I couldn't do it. I'm sorry. I do have a passion. I'm passionate about hunting. I'm passionate about the outdoors. I'm a fisherman. I support trapping. I see the benefits. But we have to find a compromise. Education, I've heard that. I think that's a great approach.
Sir, if you could wrap it up just shortly.
You bet. I'm just about done. Education is key, whether it's our hunter safety courses with our Ducks Unlimited, Pheasants Forever banquets, etc. That is key. This is simply a safety issue, in my mind, for the hunter, the enthusiast, and our companions, our four-legged companions. In conclusion, I would like to thank the commission, the Game and Fish, the staff, for never walking away or attempting to brush aside the tough issues. I think you all do a great service to this great state. You do it extremely well, and regardless of your decision regarding this matter, I want to thank you for your work and all that you do for the residents and non-residents. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next, we have Jerry Eckridge.
My name is Jerry Eckridge. I'm from Spearfish, South Dakota. Thank you, commissioners, for listening, and thanks to the audience. With respect to number one, Me Too, I'll defer to Commissioner Bruner's sentiments. I think that needs some tweaking. With respect to item number two, I'll defer to Mr. Cook, the trapper, as someone who had a professional interest in seeing that law enforcement caught crooks and enforce crooks and send them to jail. I think that the more things that you can do to send the unethical trapper to jail is better. I think marking traps would do that. With respect to item three, I defer to most of the trappers in the room who are in favor of that. And then with respect to the education issue, getting back to our millennials, there's a lot of beautiful public lands, many of which I've taken my millennial children to who are not hunters. Who I'm trying to get the fish, and if they knew that there were traps on land by way of a sign, by way of something that I could point out to them in a book, in something other than the book for Game and Fish, that would be helpful, and it helped me explain it to them. This was a new issue for me, and I've hunted since I was, before it was legal for me to do so. So thank you for bringing this issue to everyone's attention.
Thank you, sir. Next, we have Bill Fuller.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to express my interest. I'm a member of the South Dakota Sheep Growers. I'm the secretary, and I'm here representing them. And thank you, Kelly, for work with us. The South Dakota Sheep Growers have worked with Game Fish and Parks for years and years, longer than I've been here even. But I just would like to comment a little bit on these articles of the trap tags. I don't feel, and I'm representing the sheep growers, and I've talked with the membership and so forth, but we don't feel that the trap tags are necessary. It's just something that is more to go around. You've heard from other people here, and I'm not going to beat a dead horse on that. But on the trapping and the right-of-ways, is this county roads, township roads, state roads, federal roads? I don't know. I haven't been. I just don't know. But and then what constitutes a federal land? Is that all like the national forest, the federal grasslands, all that? It's all of that. Okay. Well, the South Dakota sheep growers are firmly against closing and trapping and snaring on these right-of-ways, especially during what I would call pheasant season, which runs, I think, till early January, and that's right through the heart of trapping season, when fur are worth something, and I don't think that I'm opposed to it. I would want to, though, take the time to thank you people for supporting the Wildlife Services, which I know works with you and through you, and then also for the trappers that you put on the ground. They're invaluable to us. I really mean that. And I just think that... this is kind of going against we employ people to trap and thing, and then here we're eliminating it. And I'm opposed to it. Thank you very much. And the lady with the dog, I have a dog that, well, next to my wife and kids, she's the most important thing in my life, because I raise a lot of sheep, and she is a tremendous sheepdog. And it would be really, I feel it's my duty, though, to keep that dog at my place where she's safe. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Last, we have David Schmidt. Mr. Schmidt, just to be clear, you marked on here that you wanted to speak about live trapping.
Right.
Is that in connection with the snaring and snare?
It was actually open forum.
Open forum, okay. We'll hold off on you then, and we'll get to you when the open forum opens up. They were very similar related, so I wasn't sure. Thank you. Okay, that concludes item number 23. Item number 24, hunting requirement, mandatory CWD testing. Are there any individuals who wish to speak on that subject? Seeing none, that concludes the public hearing.
Okay, thank you, John. I would like to thank all the people that came up and testified. I understand your passions and your thoughts on that. With that, we will take 15 here and take a little break, and then we'll come back with finalizations. So let's take a break.